Chapter 48, Fate Marches On. At first, nothing happened. The agent had reemerged. Greencoat was looking up at the sky, though the sun was no longer visible. It had just glided over the edge of falling wall, and the first shadows were darkening the valley. Springtime Snake was looking around him, very frightened. "What a pity we can't hear what they're saying," said Christian. "But we can see it," replied Big Tiger. "Look at Greencoat." Apparently, he was ordering Springtime Snake and his agent to do something, but both were refusing. So he began to rain blows and kicks on them, and when this did not help, he picked up the whip, which Springtime Snake had brought back from his unlucky trip, and gave the little agent a terrible beating. Springtime Snake would have liked to run away, but he was afraid. Blows were a trifling matter compared with being shot at, and so he too got his share. When Greencoat had finished, he went off, smart and upright, as if he were just taking a walk across the valley between the blocks of rock. He jumped across the brook and disappeared. "He's going to the truck now," said Big Tiger. "Perhaps he'll try to drive off," said Christian. "Listen." But they heard nothing. Greencoat came back after a while, carrying Springtime Snake's gun in one hand and a gasoline can in the other. The agent hurried to take the can from him. He carried it into the cave, and Springtime Snake laid the gun against the wall of rock. Then he came back. The agent reappeared too, and they both stood beside Greencoat. Greencoat seemed to be expounding a plan to them. He pointed ahead, then behind. He raised both hands above his head, then clenched his fists. Down came his fists, and Springtime Snake stepped aside in alarm. After this, Greencoat stood like a general whose orders permit of no objection. He looked first at one, then at the other, and both nodded submissively. "Perhaps," said Christian suddenly, "one of us should cross over to the other side." "But it's only 2 hours to sundown," warned Big Tiger. "That will be enough." "Then go, Kwee-chan. It's the first time I can't be with you." "Let fate decide," suggested Christian, picking up a stone. "You must say right or left, and whoever has the stone goes." "Remain together," said Dumpinyak, who was lying behind them, smiling. They wheeled around, staring in astonishment. "And we've been listening so hard," exclaimed Christian. "You're as silent as a ghost," said Big Tiger. "Where did you want to go?" asked Dumpinyak. "We'd like to see where the car is," said Christian. "They have some plan of action," said Big Tiger. "Perhaps we could see from the other side what it is." "Then go," said Dumpinyak, "and follow in my tracks. I didn't go over stones anywhere. You'll be with Cao Cheng in half an hour. Take horses, for you can ride up the slope behind Falling Wall until you're over the wall of rock, but remain at a safe distance from the edge." "We hear and obey," cried Christian and Big Tiger. They slipped quickly into their boots and put on their hats. Then they noticed that Dumpinyak wore felt shoes. "I borrowed them from Cao Cheng," he explained. "Otherwise, I could hardly have surprised you. Felt shoes are better for mountain climbing." "The casket is over there," Christian mentioned hurriedly, and then they ran down the mountainside. Dumpinyak's tracks came from the south. He had picked his way carefully, avoiding the slopes of gravel which flowed down from the summit onto a mountain ridge, where the gravel collected into a lake of loose stone. Here the going ceased to be difficult. Instead of the numerous gorges and defiles, as on the north side, there was only the mountain ridge, which led in a broad sweep down to the valley. Dumpinyak's trail went right through the middle of it, and far below they could see the horses and Cao Cheng sitting at a fire with one of his men. The blue smoke climbed straight up into the blue sky. "Cao Cheng knows his way all right," said Christian. "That's why he's a frontier captain," said Big Tiger. The stream, which trickled behind falling wall, seemed to emerge here again. Little pools glittered in the sun, and yellow Derisen grass stood in straggling tussocks around the water. The horses were finding some spare grazing. "Come and have tea!" cried Cao Cheng, stamping heavily toward Christian and Big Tiger in Dampignac's riding boots. "We have something to do first," said Big Tiger, and he explained why they had come. But Cao Cheng was adamant. "Drinking tea is also an important matter," he said. "In doing the one, we shall not neglect the other." He sent his man to fetch and saddle the horses while they drank tea. "Did Cassim kill the ass?" asked Big Tiger. "Wasn't that a master shot?" cried Cao Cheng eagerly. "Cassim is like Yu Zhu, the archer, and his shots come like lightning from the clouds." "But why did the others fire, too?" asked Big Tiger. "To frighten the enemy," said Cao Cheng. "That is laid down in the 6 rules for warriors, and also in the Golden Code of War." And he marched impressively as a god of war up to the horses. "My gun," he commanded imperiously. The man brought it in haste. One could see how impressed he was by events. Things like this did not happen on the frontier every day. They galloped as far as the winding gravel bed which came from Falling Wall. Just before reaching it, Cao Cheng pointed to the firm ground, which distinctly showed the wheel tracks of the truck. "The criminals drove along here," he said. Big Tiger thought of Dambit, who had shoveled gravel for Greencoat. "If we had a spade, we could dig a ditch for the car to get stuck in," he said. "I see," said Cao Cheng. "You mean a kind of car trap. Don't worry, we have Cassim. He'll fire at the tires and they'll go bang." He moved cautiously a little to the south, and they could see his 4 men in the distance. They were lying on the hills within calling distance of each other, but Cassim was well to the front. Cao Cheng waved encouragement, and the horses slowed down to a walk. They had crossed the valley and were now going up the mountain slope, which formed the back of Falling Wall. The high ground was bathed in sunshine, but when they got to the top, the shadow of the wall of rock was already climbing up the other side of the valley. "May we request the esteemed captain to wait here with the horses?" asked Big Tiger. "Certainly," replied Cao Cheng. "These heavy boots unfortunately prevent me from taking part in the reconnaissance, but take care the scoundrels don't spot you." Christian and Big Tiger walked upright as long as they saw their shadows before them. Then they lay down and crawled to the edge of the wall of rock. Beneath them they saw the fire glowing and the little fat man sitting beside it. Springtime Snake and Greencoat were not visible, but the truck was standing at the other side of the stream under a steep wall of rock. Christian and Big Tiger were overjoyed at the sight of it. It seemed like seeing an old friend again. It was packed full with cans, the gate boards were up, the hood was closed, and it was ready for the road. "Perhaps Greencoat is in the cave," asked Christian. "What did he fetch the can of gasoline for?" asked Big Tiger. They were silent, for there was no answer to either question. But suddenly the door of the driver's cab opened, and Greencoat got out. Springtime Snake followed, pulling out a shovel and a pickaxe. Greencoat took some tools out of the toolbox. Then he climbed up on the truck. Springtime Snake ran to help, but at a sign from Greencoat, remained standing below. The gasoline cans from Olon Tore were standing higher than usual and showed almost halfway over the sides. The iron drum, which Dombit had mentioned, was also in its place behind the driver's cab. Greencoat tried the weight of several cans until he found the right one. He handed it down to Springtime Snake, who started to fill the tank, but it took only a little more gasoline, and he soon handed back the can. Springtime Snake opened the radiator, dipped in his finger, and held it up to Greencoat. This seemed to satisfy Greencoat, who now took up the tools, shut the door, and crossed the stream. He threaded his way through the boulders and rocks just as coolly as if not a single shot had been fired, but he failed to inspire courage in Springtime Snake, who followed with the pick and shovel, casting frightened glances down the valley. "Are you ready?" the agent called out to them, but Greencoat did not deign to answer. "What do you think of it?" whispered Christian. "Wait 2 minutes," replied Big Tiger. "Perhaps we'll find out something more." They looked down, but the fat man was again sitting alone at the fire. Greencoat and Springtime Snake had gone into the cave. A few moments later, however, Springtime Snake emerged with an armful of cotton, threw it down before the agent, and disappeared into the cave again. Soon he came back with more cotton. The fat man began to twist it, and Springtime Snake watched him for a moment. Then he took the pickaxe and began to hack out a narrow ditch in the direction of the stream. He had not progressed far with his work when Greencoat came out of the cave and took the pick from him. With only a shovel, Springtime Snake's work slowed down, but on the other hand, muffled blows of the pick came from the cave, succeeded by the sharp metallic sound of a chisel being driven into stone. "Kwee Chan," whispered Big Tiger, "I'd like to know what they're up to." "They're going to blow up Falling Wall," replied Christian. "Yes," said Big Tiger, "but what for?" "If we say to Cao Cheng now, Falling Wall is going to collapse again tonight, what do you think he'll do?" asked Christian. "He'll ride off with his 5 men, and it can't be helped." "That's why Greencoat wants to blow it up," said Christian. "An explosion makes confusion, and in the confusion, he'll drive off. The truck is standing ready. You see how far the lumps of rock fell last time? There are none on the edge of the stream." "Now it's all clear," said Big Tiger, "and we'll go." "We better hurry," said Christian. They looked down once more. The fat man had stood up. He was carrying a pack of cotton under his arm, busily twisting it as he walked, and laying the rope along the bottom of the ditch. "They'll pour gasoline over it afterwards," said Christian, "and when they're safely in the truck and the engine is started, they'll light it." Big Tiger looked very worried. "What shall we do?" he asked. "Can we do anything?" "Let's tell Dumping Yak," suggested Christian. "He's in command, and it would be cheeky to forestall him." "Bolna," said Big Tiger, beginning to creep back. Christian also crept backwards, but soon they stood up and ran as quickly as they could back to the horses. When they reached Cao Cheng, they were quite out of breath. "What's the hurry for?" asked Cao Cheng, surprised. "In hurry is error." "Greencoat wants to break through," Christian informed him. "Is he preparing to attack?" inquired Cao Cheng uneasily. "We don't think so," Big Tiger reassured him, "but they want to get away." "Ha, ha, ha," laughed Cao Cheng. "The poor devils haven't got a team of flying dragons, nor can they ride on the clouds. How can they escape us?" "In the horseless car," said Big Tiger. "They won't try that," Cao Cheng assured them. "I've ordered my soldiers to start firing every hour, or oftener, as soon as it's dark. That will frighten the enemy and prevent my men from falling asleep. They're as wary as antelopes, but what good is that? They have to be kept awake. The life of a frontier guard is a hard one." "All the same," said Christian, "we do not wish to lose a minute." "As the young gentlemen wish," said Cao Cheng. He emphasized the words "young gentlemen" rather more than necessary, indeed almost offensively. But Christian and Big Tiger were in a hurry, and Cao Cheng gave in. He wanted to show them that he was ready to go out of his way to oblige them, and they rode at a gallop as soon as they got down into the valley. "One of us should remain with the horses," said Big Tiger. "We'll toss for it," suggested Christian. "No," said Big Tiger, "I'll stay and you go." The sun was going down when they reached Cao Cheng's camp. "Report to the prince," said Cao Cheng, "that we're impatiently awaiting a fight with the criminals." "I shall report your words faithfully," promised Christian. "What?" cried Cao Cheng. "Does that mean you're going to climb up into the rocky wilderness alone?" It means, said Big Tiger, that my feet are tired and I can't climb any more. If the esteemed captain will permit me, I should like to rest here for a while. I shall help to tie the horses. Tie them? Exclaimed Cao Cheng. Why tie them since we're spending the night watching? Our horses are used to being tied. If they're not standing quietly together at night, they're unhappy. Cao Cheng laughed uproariously. He had never heard that horses could be either happy or unhappy. He was still limp with laughter when Christian said, I'll be back soon. At this he pulled himself together. Stop, he said. We must have a password, as it may be night by then. What about old governor? That's good, said Christian. I'll shout old, and you'll reply governor. That's how we've learned this business. And off he went. He climbed the mountain ridge, and as he stood under the summit, the sun sank. But Christian had no eyes for the wild beauty of the radiant gold and red plain, the flaming hills, and the steep black wall opposite, which descended to a bottomless abyss. He raced along, again following Dumping Yak's trail, and reached the jagged crest of the summit as night fell. "Where's Big Tiger?" asked Dumping Yak immediately. "He remained with the horses," replied Christian, "as we didn't know what Cao Cheng would do if falling wall collapses." "Good," said Dumping Yak, and Christian continued his report. Dumping Yak knew almost everything already. He had seen the fat man twisting the cotton and springtime snake shoveling, and he had heard Green Coat hammering and tapping in the cave. When Christian told him, however, that the truck was standing ready to rush through the southern exit, Dumping Yak gave a violent start and seemed to want to dash off immediately. But he thought better of it. He looked up at the evening star, then at the crescent moon, then his glance dropped to the bottom of Falling Wall. The fire was still burning. The agent was sitting beside it. The night was completely still, and a cool breeze was blowing up from the gorge. "They're ready," he said. "We must hurry." At that moment, Springtime Snake emerged from the cave, carrying Good Fortune's beautiful storm lantern. He said a few words to the agent, then the two went into the cave. "Too late," murmured Dumping Yak. "Cassim is our only hope now," and he stared down at the speck of light. For the first time, Christian saw how roomy the cave was. The two men walked upright into the vault, but stopped after a few paces. Springtime Snake held up the lantern. Then they were lost to view. Only the friendly yellow glow could be seen reflected on the fissured walls. For a few seconds, the tall frame of Springtime Snake and the small one of the fat man were sharply silhouetted as they stood motionless together. Suddenly they drew apart and made way for a third, who emerged from somewhere, handed something to the fat man, and disappeared again. After that, they noticed that the agent had a pickaxe in his hand, and when Greencoat came back, he handed him more tools. Thus loaded, the agent turned back to the truck, with Springtime Snake behind him, carrying the lantern. He was holding it lower now, and it was plain that he was lighting the way for Greencoat, too, who was pouring gasoline over the white cotton rope as he went. They had got to the exit of the cave and were just stepping into the open when a shot rang out. It was the first of the nocturnal terror shots which Cao Cheng had ordered his men to fire, but it was also the last. The sharp report shook Greencoat and terrified Springtime Snake so completely that his knees gave under him and he simply slumped down. Greencoat snatched the lantern from him and held it high, but the glass was shattered, and a ribbon of flame shot through the cave. For the fraction of a minute it was lit up and bright as noonday. Then a flash of lightning shot out from it, blinding and sharp as the stab of a dagger. A pale glow swept over the quaking rock, and then all went down in the thundering explosion which rent Falling Wall from top to bottom. Even on the summit of the mountain, the earth shook under the momentous force of the collapsing cliffs. Christian felt the blast and the breath of hot wind which rose above the thundering roll of the masses of rock. When it ceased, A great rain of stones came rolling down from all sides into the gorge. A cloud of dust rose right up to the summit on which Christian had lain with Big Tiger and hovered there for a long time. "Is it over?" asked Christian, sniffing. The air smelled of dry dust, of hot stone, a little bit of gasoline, and of something that Christian didn't know. Perhaps it's gunpowder, he thought, or perhaps it's something worse. Dom Pignac stood up. "Come," he said quietly. Christian picked up the jewel casket, which lay where Big Tiger had put it. His heart beat fiercely as he followed Dom Pignac, who was walking down the mountainside in Cao Chang's felt shoes. The night gleamed clear and cool over the stony slopes, and soon they saw the shimmering mountain ridge which led down to the valley. When they got near Cao Chang's camp, they could hear the snorting of horses and the agitated voices of men. Cao Chang was shouting excitedly, and in between they could hear Big Tiger's voice saying again and again, "Wait just 2 minutes. Please wait." "No," cried Cao Chang. "When the heavens fall, it is a sure sign that this is no place for us. We have ventured too far forward." He had 1 foot already in the stirrup when Dom Pignac stepped into view. "Captain," he said, "I hear that you are in a hurry to get away. May I ask you to please let us change shoes before you go?" "Oh, I see," said Cao Chang, abashed. "But then we shall sit down," suggested Dom Pignac. "Your Highness," objected Cao Chang, "my men are all here but one. They have narrowly escaped death. Nobody is in the mood for sitting down in such circumstances." "Where's Cassim?" asked Dom Pignac. "That's just it," replied Cao Chang. "He's 9/10 dead, or perhaps altogether." Dom Pignac began to pull off the felt shoes. "Order your men to unsaddle and prepare a meal," he said. "Meanwhile, the boys and I will go look for Cassim. Where are our horses?" "They're here," said Big Tiger. He was standing apart, holding the stallion. Christian was holding the others. Cao Chang had no more to say. He was petrified with astonishment at Dom Pignac's utter indifference to earthquakes and collapsing cliffs, but he was relieved to know what was to be done. He himself would have just ridden off at random into the night, unable to tell his men where they were going. So he sat down and pulled off Dom Pignac's boots, growing calmer as he did so. "That's right," said Dom Pignac. "You must set your men an example." At these words, Cao Chang's breast swelled with pride. He began giving orders, and his soldiers, who at first had grumbled, soon stopped and unsaddled quite eagerly. When Dom Pignac mounted, Cao Chang stood up and wished the party good luck and long life. He nearly added riches, but it didn't seem in place just then. Meantime, Christian had fastened the saddlebag containing the jewel casket to his saddle. Then they rode off behind Dom Pignac. By the time they reached the gravelly slope which ran from Falling Wall, Christian had told Big Tiger all there was to tell. Greencoat was dead, so were Springtime Snake and the agent. Big Tiger nodded. "We've been suffering 100 useless worries," he said, "and in the end, heaven has passed the death sentence." Christian knew well what Big Tiger meant. All three had died far from their homeland. They were uncoffined and unmourned, with no one to offer prayer and sacrifice for their souls. They were nobody's ancestors. They were dead. They rode in silence along the gravel slope, and when they got near the hill on which Cassim lay, they heard him calling and saw him waving, and they waved back. He came down towards them and then stood still. "Salam," he cried, stretching out both arms. Christian and Big Tiger leaped from their horses and ran to meet him. The bearded Turki greeted them. Turkis, originally from Turkestan, are one of the races inhabiting Xinjiang. They are Mohammedans. The bearded Turki greeted them like brothers in his own language, yet they knew what he meant. Big Tiger replied in Chinese, and Christian told him in Mongolian how glad they were to see him alive. Together they walked over to where Dom Pignac had dismounted. Before Cassim had time to speak, The venerable chief greeted him, and Kasim thanked him with much emotion, then pointed down into the gorge. Dampignac shook his head. At break of day we shall go and see what's there, he said. Inshallah, replied the pious Muslim. And a note says, Inshallah, as God wills. Christian offered Kasim his horse. With a grateful smile he accepted, lifting Christian up in front of him. And so they rode back to Cao Cheng. While still far off, they could see the faint glow of the campfire. Suddenly, someone stood before them, roaring, Halt! Who goes there? Old, answered Big Tiger. I guessed it was you, replied Cao Cheng. You have to say something else, Captain, Christian reminded him. You might be a stranger, or even an enemy. By night, only the password will do, added Big Tiger. You're right, cried Cao Cheng. I was only putting you to the test. Did you find Kasim? Ah, I see you've come back without him. Alas, we must mourn him. I'm Compass Mountain, cried Christian, jumping down from the saddle. But behind me rides another. Salam, cried Kasim solemnly. He was immediately surrounded by the Tungans, who had fled when the rocks collapsed. Later, Cao Cheng told them that to save the faces of the Tungans, Kasim had said he had lost consciousness when the earth quaked, and only that had made him stay behind. As they all sat around the fire, Dampignac told what had happened at Falling Wall. Thus it is when fate takes its course, said Cao Cheng wisely. There are 1,000 ways of losing one's life. When the thunder roared and the earth heaved up and down like a scale beam, we only smiled and sat tight. He looked around the circle triumphantly, and those of his hearers who understood his language cast down their eyes, abashed by his shameless talk. Dampignac smiled. Big Tiger felt like answering, and Christian was tempted to ask where Cao Cheng wanted to ride off to an hour ago. But they were all too tired to say anything. They were thankful for the warm fire and fell asleep without taking tea. Cao Cheng sat proud and upright beside them.